Good morning, everyone, and welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. The Hall of Famer Chris Carter is looking for something.
He found
all of it. He found everything he was looking for.
Let's go, baby.
That is Nick Wright. We are all in a great mood on this Thursday morning.
Nice pants you got on there, Jenna.
Thank
you. Got some little zippers across.
No, you don't need to stand.
Why? He said.
Listen to him. It's your show.
Thank
listen
you.
To him. You tell us.
Just
let's we start
this,
with Jenna Wolf. Jenna Wolf's looking hot today. Got some pants on new. Let's go. Let's get this cranking.
All that being said, he's wearing pants too. So
well,
we're
she's
in a
cold.
Good place.
She didn't like me saying she's
big
hot.
Show today. D Wade turned back the clock with a clutch
Nick,
performance.
Go.
Celtics keep on losing for some reason, but we're going to start
not that good.
With LeBron's response to those questioning
good.
How much he's got left in the tank.
I think
Lakers looking to make up some ground out west, hosting the Pelicans. Here we go. Pick this up with 2 minutes left. L.A. up by three. LeBron with the basket and one. Lakers up six. Under a minute to go. Lakers up three again. LeBron forcing the Jrue Holiday turnover. What do we call that? Oh, defense. LeBron making highlights here from the corner. One leg, watch it, nails the dagger. 33 points, 10 assists for the King. Lakers win, beating the Pelicans 125-119. All right, Nick Wright, what did you make of LeBron and the Lakers last night?
Well, on the Lakers, and listen, it was a must-win game. The season's over with a loss there. You can stop counting losses. I know I said they had 10 losses to play with 3 losses ago, but it wouldn't have been. No, now they have 6. No, you can't go Pelicans, Grizzlies, Pelicans and go for 3. So they stay alive. LeBron looked the best he's looked since his return, and not coincidentally, it was the fewest minutes he's played over the last 8 games, and he was fresh at the end to do that. And Kuzma and Ingram, the two guys who I've been told are just emotionally scarred from being involved in trade rumors, they were both very good, and one the play we didn't show was the play right before LeBron went on that 3-play run, where it's a 1-point game, and LeBron lets Ingram take it. Ingram goes right to the cup, gets a layup, gives him the 3-point separation that then LeBron adds to a couple times down the court. It was a critical win. It was a great win in the way the guys did it, where Ingram, Kuzma do play well, LeBron plays great, and Rondo does everything except for shoot the ball well. And it gives the Lakers a bit of a, all right, We've gathered ourselves a bit. The rest of the Western Conference, Kings lost, Clippers lost, helped them a bit. And now they've got Friday, a game against the best team in basketball thus far this season, the Milwaukee Bucks. And you see how much this was progress and how much this was Anthony Davis, who was en route to scoring about 40, not playing in the last 14 minutes of the game, and how much that helped him.
I'll start my commentary. Forget about the compliments. I'll start with the Anthony Davis. And the reason why you get this type of result is because Anthony Davis, they decided to sit him at the end. But he could have scored as many points as he wanted against the Lakers.
Correct.
Did the Lakers need to win this game? Of course they did. Have we been counting the games as far as how many games can they give away? You can't count them anymore because the Lakers can lose every game that they play. They have shown that losing to the Hawks. They have shown that losing to the Magic. They have shown that losing to the Pelicans without AD. And they would have lost last night, I believe, if AD continues to play.
Game.
Yes, absolutely. At the end, they did have a system for what they were going to do. I still believe that not only the young players were scarred by all the, because that's real. Last night's game, they did show up big, but the veteran players. And the reason why the veteran players, I believe in Rondo and Lance, played better because they had a clear role for which they were going to be playing. If you're looking at positives, I would look at the rotation. I would look at the veteran players, the roles that they were played. Rondo starting the game, I believe that's a better lineup, even though they're very, very small. I believe that Bullock should come off the bench. And Rondo should be starting with Lonzo being hurt. But, man, the Lakers are not out of the woods. They got plenty of problems. LeBron 3-for-8 from the free throw line. That right there continues to be a problem, continues to be worse since he's come back from his injury.
But let me ask you this. You said the Lakers can lose every game that they play. If they play the way they played last night, if LeBron plays the way he played, could they win every game
well,
that they're going
to
play?
They're going to have to play better than they played last night. But when LeBron plays the way he did last night, yes, they can beat anybody. They can beat anybody short of, in a one-game sample, anybody. And they this is the reason why I think the Lakers still, with all their problems, if they get a first-round series against the Nuggets, I think they're very live in that because it will have meant they are playing well up to that point by getting to the first round series, by even getting into the playoffs. And I don't think the Nuggets match up well against them, even though we have seen what a quality big man can do against the Lakers right now when they are not starting a big man. They went super small, as C mentioned. They left Reggie Bullock in the starting lineup and brought Rondo back into it. I think you almost have to start Rondo because he gets re-engaged. Rondo is a guy that will float and is a guy that if he is not happy with his role can be not only not a positive but can be a negative. But the other key parts of this game were this is the first time they weren't playing uphill in forever. The first game without a 10-point deficit at some point since LeBron's first game back from injury, that Clippers win. This was the first game that they were either in control of or just had a small deficit the entirety of the game. And so at no point was there the opportunity to let go of the rope, which is what we have seen in these other games. But no, they're not out of the woods. But right now the Lakers are happy to just still be in the woods.
Right.
They're happy to still be playing relevant games. If they would have last night, in my opinion, fallen to 29-32, to me, that's a wrap. They'd be four games back of the eight seed with 21 to play, and you could write them off.
Take out what Anthony Davis could have done. What you saw LeBron actually do last night, despite what we've been talking about him and saying about him, do you think he has enough in the tank to be able to do that again and again to make a playoff run?
It's going
to
be tight. It's going to be tight. They have to also have Rondo play well, because I believe the Lakers are better when LeBron is not the primary ball handler, given the team that they have now. It's different if they have Lonzo in there. Lonzo's a lot better shooter and can get more spacing on the court than Rondo. But when Rondo is distributing the ball, LeBron has to be an elite scorer for this team. Now, people will say, well, is that really his strong suit? When he's in the playoffs, that's his strong suit. And if LeBron doesn't score 28 to 40 points, they don't have enough scoring within the Lakers to be able to win in that very, very competitive Western Conference. So I like Rondo being the predominantly ball handler because the Lakers, when they don't have that and LeBron is setting up the offense, it becomes harder for them to be able to score with the elite teams in the NBA.
And because I think they should leave Rondo in the starting lineup as well. Where I disagree with you is it's not Bullock I would take out of the lineup, because I do want Bullock, since he came over, shooting 52% from three on passes from LeBron James. Like, he is the shooter the team didn't get beforehand. He's limited in a lot of other ways, but he can hit knockdown open threes. I would rather they put Kuzma or Ingram, one of those two guys, to the super sixth man role, because that bench unit.
I'm sure at this point, after everything they've been through, neither one of those young players was going to respond to that. Not only am I getting ready to be traded, all these rumors about me, now I've been a starter, now they're getting ready to put me on the bench. They don't have enough experience. You need a veteran. If you're going to take a starter, you much prefer him to be a veteran player who understands where you can go to him and be like, listen, you're more valuable with this second unit compared to these young guys who are trying to gain credibility as far as their game is concerned.
Well, I understand that, and it's a good point that for either one of those guys, it would be a shot to the ego, at least temporarily. But they know they're better than Reggie Bullock. Reggie Bullock would be in their place in the starting lineup. It would be about our second unit, last night notwithstanding, is repeatedly getting killed. We need a guy that can initiate offense. I think Ingram could do that. But sidebar from that to your question about LeBron. LeBron last night, he had his burst. I still don't think he has his stamina. I don't think he's in the shape he wants to be in for the end of the season. But you saw he had his lift back. You saw this was the healthiest he has been. The stamina is going to take time, but I don't think the groin's bothering him at all anymore. And they're going to need that and a lot more over these last 21 games.
All right, so the Lakers get the win at home last night. Four of the next five are at home, so perhaps a little good news for them looking forward. Coming up on the other side, the downward spiral for the Boston Celtics continues. That is next on FS1, and you can always check us out on the Fox Sports channel on SiriusXM. We will be right back.
Hey guys, it's Nick Wright, and I want to tell you about Indochino, a new way for men to upgrade their wardrobe without breaking the bank. Indochino was founded on the belief that you don't need to spend a fortune on a custom wardrobe by taking the premium, made-to-measure experience direct to the consumer. They've created a superior alternative to off-the-rack clothing at ready-to-wear prices. Indochino allows customers to step into the shoes of a designer to create custom suits, shirts, chinos, blazers, and overcoats. They select from hundreds of fabrics and endless options, including lapels, pockets, buttons, linings, and monograms. Indochino couldn't make it any easier to start looking good. Just follow these easy steps. Visit a stylist at our showroom and have them take your measurements personally or measure at home yourself and shop online at Indochino.com. Choose your fabric inside and out. Choose your design customizations, submit your measurements with your choices, and then relax while your suit gets professionally tailored and mailed to you in the next couple of weeks. My listeners can get any premium Indochino suit for just $359 at Indochino.com when entering FTF at checkout. That's 50% off the regular price for a made-to-measure premium suit. Plus, shipping is free. That's Indochino.com, promo code FTF for any premium suit for just $359 and free shipping. That's an incredible deal for a premium made-to-measure suit. Now, back to the show.
Boston Celtics in just a second, but first, you guys catch this. College hoops, Ole Miss, Tennessee, Terrence Davis taking off down the floor, skies it in for the dunk.
Tennessee won this game on a great play late, but this is a great play by the Ole Miss kid.
Tennessee, the defender, he thinks he's going to lay it up off the backboard, so he goes to try
pin
to
it.
Yeah. Hey, guy, he getting ready to finish this one on you. Yeah. That's what they do now.
NBA now, Hawks and T-Wolves. Trae Young lobbing one up to John Collins.
Trae Young was spectacular last night. Third rookie ever with back-to-back 35.5 assist games.
We've been saying that a lot lately.
Joins Iverson and a guy you might have heard of.
NBA got to do something about those uniforms. Man, I thought I was watching the Clippers or something. It's the Hawks.
And the Pelicans look like the Nuggets. And the Pelicans look like they were in the old Nuggets.
Come on, stop.
Go ahead.
Clippers, Jazz, your guy Donovan Mitchell, see?
Donovan Mitchell almost blew this game for them, taking a terrible three late in the game when they were up four with 12 on the shot clock. I was watching it because it's very important that the Clippers lose, and they did lose. Good win,
Utah,
by the Jazz.
Even though we don't talk about them a lot, still a dangerous team in the West.
Mm-hmm. They are still celebrating this down in Miami. Final play of the night. Heat, Warriors, Dwayne Wade drains the clutch three at the buzzer to beat the Golden State Warriors.
Man, Miami was up 24 early in this game.
Yes.
But then all of a sudden, the Warriors chipped away. This was D-Wade's second straight three. In between those two threes was one missed Durant free throw when Durant had been spectacular. A lot of luck involved in this one, but a great moment for Flash.
Dwayne Wade made some big buckets coming down the stretch. At least three of them. That just happened to be the lucky.
Guys, maybe it is the hair. You didn't like it. Maybe it's the hair. Moving on to the Celtics now, who were looking to snap their three-game losing streak. Mission not accomplished. Celtics played well, but not well enough to beat the Blazers. Damian Lillard put up 33 as Portland took this one 97-92. The Celtics have now lost four in a row. They've lost six of their last eight, and they've lost ground in the East, falling deeper down into that fifth spot. Here's Kyrie after the game.
1-2 is pretty much locked up, 1-2-3. So, just play to, as long as we get there. I can't wait for this. All this other BS about regular season and keep getting better and talking over and over and over and again about what we can do to keep getting better in the regular season. I just want to be at the highest level playing. I mean, that's what I'm here for.
What's your confidence level in the team going forward?
What do you mean?
Just in terms of, you got a
question. Is that?
A legitimate question. I mean, I just,
How
do you feel about this team?
Okay, next question.
Listen, somehow, some way, Kyrie still believes in this team, or at least he's telling the media. He's still optimistic. He still thinks he can turn things around. So it's what we said we wanted to hear out of Kyrie if he was going to be the leader on this team. But how much trouble, realistically, CC, are the Celtics in?
They're in a lot of trouble. We just want him to lie. He was lying right there. That's what we want him to do. He's lying. There's no way that he left this game saying, oh, man, he just did a better interview than what he did after the Toronto game. All right, they can't fool me. I want you to lie. Yeah, man, get up to me. You got confidence in the guy? Absolutely. Because we're supposed to win this game if we give up 97 points to Portland. So it's not a matter of our defense. It's not a matter of us not committing to be able to help each other out. No. They're not a great offensive team now. Now, We were thinking that Boston always, we baked in, going to get great coaching from Brad Stevens. They're going to be a great defensive team. And they got Kyrie to be able to close out the game. We thought that was the winning formula. But right now, they're not a good offensive team, which they've experienced that before. They're not an elite defensive team. And you can tell when they start making substitutions, their pattern is not consistent. And you don't see that togetherness. You don't see, wow, man, they're really deep. You don't see Terry Rozier spring off the bench and play like when we saw him. You don't see those types of things. So the Boston Celtics, to me, are still in trouble. Because the reality of it, when we started the season, Nick, you had a stat 2 days ago. When the season started, Vegas had them.
It was second most wins.
Second most wins.
They were the second highest projected total. It was Golden State 1, Boston 2.
So now we're talking about 20 games left in the season. They're 10 games behind Milwaukee. So, no, man, they got trouble, man. They can only get as high as the 3 seed. Now, they're probably not going to drop it lower than the 5th seed. But when you start the season, the Boston Celtics, and given they haven't had the type of injuries that other teams have had, and you're saying, man, they're 10 games back. No, this is not the type of season, nor is there anything that you're looking at from them, you say, you know something? I'm encouraged about seeing what's going to happen the next couple weeks.
Listen, they have not been an elite team all year. And now they are in their worst stretch of basketball in 3 years. The last time they lost 6 of 8 was January of 2016. The last time they had worse than a 6 of 8 streak as far as losses go was the last really bad Celtics team, the 14-15 Celtics. They've lost 4 in a row for just the second time in this new resurgent era of Celtic basketball and lost 6 of 8 for just the second time in this resurgent era of Celtic basketball. They are who we think they are right now, not who a lot of people thought they would be,
right.
Which is you mentioned, C, that they're not going to fall lower than the 5th seed, and they're not, because there were supposed to only be 5 legitimate teams in the Eastern Conference. One of those teams, Indiana, had its best player rip his quad off the bone, and they're still 3 games ahead of them. I have thought, even though I have been more skeptical of the Celtics than almost anybody, of course they'll catch the Pacers. They're 3 games back of the Pacers. Like, they're as far back of the Pacers as the Lakers are of the playoffs. So the idea that they're just going to magically move above the 5 lines, Kyrie had something really interesting to say there, which is basically they brought me here for the playoffs. I'm here for the big games. I'm ready for the big games. Okay, they're going to need you desperately in those big games because last year, as good as that Celtics playoff run was, they couldn't win on the road. Against Milwaukee, they were 0-3 on the road. Against Philadelphia, 1-1. Against the Cavs, 0-3. So they were 1-7 on the road in the playoffs last year. Right now, they're going to be on the road to start every series they play in.
And Kyrie, to me, is still just such a wannabe. Kyrie, man, wants to be LeBron so bad. That's why he said that. There at no point in Kyrie's career has he said, you know something, I'm here for the playoffs. But he knew LeBron and what they went through with the Cavs. LeBron is here for the playoffs. We don't need the 1st seed. Or we don't need the 2nd seed. Or we don't need the 3rd seed because I'm a better player and I can overcome all those things. Kyrie has never said that. And saying that, when you're just going to disregard these last 20 games, Kyrie, do you really believe in that? Because you said that, oh, don't worry about Toronto. They got smashed by Toronto. So, to me, Kyrie is grabbing at stuff. That's why he called LeBron. And it's a lot of time like your kids. Because Kyrie, he's like a little brother, not a kid, because no one wants to be known as a kid. It's like your kids. When the parents are successful, those kids try to do everything they can not to follow in the footsteps of their successful parents. But ultimately, they envy that success, and they end up trying to emulate everything that you've done. And that's what I see with Kyrie, with some of the things. When he called LeBron, he's trying to find out about leadership. And Kyrie has never said that. You know, oh, I'm here for just the playoffs. That's not why they brought you to Boston, though.
The Boston Celtics, for better or worse, have lost the last 6 games that Kyrie has played in. We've got this narrative sort of brewing that Kyrie, while his numbers are great, do not help this team win. And the talk all week was that maybe the system that he's playing in doesn't work for Kyrie. Is it on the board that Kyrie changes to fit into Brad Stevens' system? Or does Danny Ainge need Brad Stevens to change his system to get his superstar to fit
into
that?
Well, you can't change it midstream. If they are fortunate enough for Kyrie to stay, which I think right now is overwhelmingly unlikely. But let's say he does, then yes, there needs to be a systemic change in Boston to make the best use of your best player. But I will not, I know that they are now in the year 9-2 without Kyrie Irving and 28-23 with Kyrie Irving. I cannot buy into the idea that this team is better without Kyrie,
right.
Most notably because we know they have a ceiling in the postseason without Kyrie. I will buy into this notion. They'd be better if Gordon Hayward went home for the rest of the year. Those 21 minutes, Gordon, God bless him. I wish him the best. I hope next year he comes back, looks more like himself. But maybe Tatum and Brown are more the players we thought they would be this year, or a lot of people thought they would be, if those minutes are dispersed amongst them. Marcus Morris is playing the best basketball of his career. Give him a few extra minutes tonight, because Gordon Hayward has shown a few flashes like, oh, maybe he's... No, he's not. Gordon Hayward is not right now a plus when he's on the court for you. Last night, what did he do last night? 28 minutes, three shots, one of three from the field. Like, Gordon Hayward's not helping you. And so this is another game where, by the way, Kyrie can say, see, I'm only worried about the playoffs, and I think what you said about the LeBron stuff's really interesting. Everyone in the East should be trying to avoid that 4-5 area.
Yes.
That 4-5 area means in the first round you play one of the other legitimate teams and you get Milwaukee if you get out of the first round. If you get to the 3 line, which should be the Celtics' goal because the 1 and 2 is gone, you're getting either you're getting probably Brooklyn in the first round. It would be Brooklyn or Charlotte or Detroit, one of those three teams in the first round. And then you might never have to play Milwaukee if Milwaukee gets upset. Like, the regular season really matters in the Eastern Conference this year. It's not last year, and it's not LeBron, which is everyone. I've beaten everyone in the East before I even take the court. Like, these last 21 games matter. And by they got Houston, Golden State, Sacramento, the Lakers, and the Clippers in 5 of their next 6 games after they have Washington coming up.
The best coaches in the league, Jenna, to answer your question about Brad Stevens, they have a variety of ways they can win. I believe that Brad Stevens, when he came up and learning how to coaching at Butler, he never thought he was going to have a superstar. I'm going to have role players. I'm going to have 3-star, 2-star. I might be able to get like a Sheldon Mack. I might be able to get a Gordon Hayward, a 4-star. I might be able to. But his system does not include typically where you're going to go a 1-4. You're going to have one guy have the ball, other 4 guys go on the baseline, and this guy get a bucket. Last night, Golden State, you know what Kevin Durant did? He waved Steph Curry off, waved him off. I'm getting ready to go get a bucket. Every good coach, Pat Riley, Phil Jackson, all these coaches, Popovich, they have a system, but they have variants in the system to have a guy. And for Brad Stevens, for me to put him in the elite class that other people have put him in, hint, hint, Nick Wright and other people, you need to have a system to say, you know something? Clear it out for that guy.
Right.
This guy right here is going to be able to get a bucket for us because every NBA team needs that. You need to have that. I'm going to break glass in emergency. Kyrie Irving has that special gift where he can get his own shot from 28 feet to 3 feet.
And it's Brad Stevens' job not to help Kyrie do that, but to help the other 4 guys on the court when Kyrie is doing that to make the most of the possession, to be in the right spot if it collapses on Kyrie, to figure out where the best lanes are for offensive rebounds, how to get back on defense. Because Kyrie can do that if you were coaching. Doesn't matter. Everybody get out of my way. I'm going to go. It's the other 4 guys when Kyrie does that seem to, they might as well not be there. That's been their problem.
Well, see, if it's not an emergency yet, they're awfully close to it. We'll take a break. Switch gears on the other side. Coming up, does Jason Garrett deserve an extension before the Cowboys season starts? That's next on First Things First.
Robinhood is an investing app that lets you buy and sell stocks, ETFs, options, and cryptos all commission-free. They strive to make financial services work for everyone, not just the wealthy. Robinhood is a non-intimidating way for stock market newcomers to invest for the first time with true confidence. Robinhood is simple and intuitive with a clear design that shows data presented in an easy-to-digest way. Here's why I recommend Robinhood. No commission fees. Other brokerages charge up to $10 for every trade. But Robinhood doesn't charge commission fees. Trade stocks and keep all of your profits. It's simple. easy to understand charts and market data. Place a trade in just four taps on your smartphone. Robinhood web platform also lets you view stock collections. Collections are like sectors, like entertainment, social media, curated categories like female CEOs, and analyst ratings of buy, hold, sell for every stock. You learn by doing it. Learn how to invest as you build your portfolio. Discover new stocks and track favorite companies with personalized news feeds, custom notifications for price movements, so you never miss the right moment to invest. Robinhood is giving our listeners a free stock, such as Apple, Ford, or Sprint, to help build your portfolio. Sign up at first.robinhood.com. That's first.robinhood.com.
Check out the Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series Sunday, 3:30 Eastern on Fox and the Fox Sports app. Time for us to go viral. All right, check out Blazers guard Rodney Hood diving after a loose ball. All the fans in the rich people seats got their drinks knocked over, including...
Watch out, Jada!
Jadakiss!
Man, I had, years and years ago, I had a really, really fun night out in Kansas City with Jadakiss, believe it or not.
I believe that.
I was like, God, I feel like I was 19 years old, maybe 20 years old. Jada's an all-timer now. This guy right here, the guy with the skull cap on or the hat, he got a lot of stuff spilled on him.
You get
he was
free,
not pleased.
Free refills when that happens? Do you get to go up and be like, did you
oh,
see
you
what happened?
Oh, you sitting in those seats, you get a Rodney, you get a lot of perks there.
Poured on.
Yeah, they actually have an attendant that comes to you.
Oh, okay. So Jada gets like,
you know,
I get another drink.
See, you know how Jenna could find out? You should take her. So either you got connections with both the local teams. Why don't you take her to one of those games?
Yeah, I took her to a game, and then we sat behind Kevin Durant. And he's sitting up there meme mugging. All right, I'm no basketball player. I'll come up there and bust you in your face. He meme mugging me. Jenna's my date at the game. Hey, bro, what you looking at?
Yeah,
I'm no fanboy.
So
because I'm doing a show with you.
He gave a stink eye the whole game.
Yeah, me and Kevin Durant was cool, man. I like his mom. Talked to his mom ever since I've been with you, bro. There's a stench coming off of me.
I know, and now he's going to be playing 41 games a night in New York.
And you can't take Jenna court, so I get the game start too late.
What? It's true.
It does
working
start after
Sleepy
my
Hollow.
All right, time for stories to start your morning. Lakers beating up on the Pelicans last night, 125-119. LeBron had 33, but he did get a lot of help in this one. Nick, which teammate impressed you the most in last night's Lakers?
I'm going to give it to Brandon Ingram because at the end of the game, one-point game, a little over a minute left, they sent a double at LeBron. LeBron finds Ingram, trusts Ingram. Ingram goes straight to the cup, gets him a layup. So he gave him a little bit of a cushion, mm-hmm. 3 points, a little over a minute left. He was good throughout. He orchestrated the offense well in the brief time LeBron was on the bench. I give it to Brandon Ingram.
I'm going to go with Rondo because I like someone else being the primary ball handler. It frees LeBron up to be a scorer. And on this team, with the lack of shooters, we need LeBron to be an elite scorer. Rondo was my second favorite.
He had 15 assists last night. He was a great distributor last night.
All right, moving on. We cannot get enough of this. Dwayne Wade with the bank shot, buzzer-beating three-pointer to take down who else but the Golden State Warriors last night. Warriors now just a half game up on Denver. CeCe, should the Warriors be worried about hanging on to that top spot?
The Warriors should be concerned, but Dwayne Wade makes an amazing reaction here because once the shot gets blocked, if he leaves that ball in his hand, they're going to call either a jump ball mm-hmm. or a traveling. He lets the ball go, is able to re-engage and get it, keep 1 foot behind the three-point line. Amazing play by a great player. But, yes, I'd be concerned.
And the Warriors, it's not just about home court in the Western Conference. It's Denver catches them. It's right now in the finals, which they've had home court in the finals every year they've been there. Mm-hmm. Right now, Milwaukee and Toronto would have home court over them. Now, they're not going to catch Milwaukee, but they could catch Toronto. This is the Warriors have been tested in one series since Kevin Durant got there. It was the one series they haven't had home court advantage. Now, it was also against a really good Rockets team.
Aided by an injury, yes.
Sure. It all matters. Even though I don't really trust Denver, the road's a little harder if you're the two seed as well. That seven seed right now, Wes, maybe you're playing the Spurs. It gets harder. It matters for them.
Down by 20 points in the first half, how they played, got to have some concern for the Warriors.
All right, let's move on to the NFL now. The Eagles won't put the franchise tag on Super Bowl MVP Nick Foles. GM Howie Roseman says Foles deserves the chance to lead a team. So with Foles set to become a free agent, The Jacksonville Jaguars are reportedly a favorite to land him. Nick, you like that fit?
Not for Nick. I like Nick Foles. He sat right here. He seemed like a really good guy. I like his story. And I think Nick Foles has shown his biggest strength is the biggest moments aren't too big for him. That he doesn't shy in big situations. But I don't think he's, first of all, I don't think he's a guy that over the course of a 16-game season is going to be an above-average NFL starter. I certainly don't think if he were going to be that, it would be in a place like Jacksonville that doesn't have good skill position guys, that has real questions all over their offense, and to me, questions at their team president and their coach. So, no, I don't like the fit for Nick Foles.
I like the fit for Nick Foles because he's definitely a better quarterback than what they have. Now they need to go out and spend some money as far as a wide receiver and a running back who can catch the ball. They've already made the announcement. Leonard Fournette is their workhorse running back. He's also a running back who can't catch the ball out of the backfield. So you become one-dimensional as an offense. Nick Foles, he needs some help with him. He needs a strong tight end, wide receivers, and backs out of the backfield. So, yes, he is an upgrade as far as talent, but let's keep on shopping if you do land Nick Foles.
All right, finally, Cowboys head coach Jason Garrett, who many speculated would be let go this past season when the Cowboys were struggling, will in fact enter the final year of his deal in 2019. His contract has yet to be extended, that despite winning a second NFC title in 3 years. The head coach says he's never spent much time thinking about the business part of the job and that he is just focused right now on winning. See, what do you think the biggest challenge will be facing Jason Garrett moving forward this season?
Not listening to the noise outside, trying to get his staff together, because we can't forget last year they struggled as an offensive line. They changed their offensive line coach in the season, Mark Colombo, very, very young offensive line coach, former Cowboys player. They also have a new quarterback coach in John Kitna. They also have a new offensive coordinator in Kellen Moore. Continuity in the NFL, it means a lot. Coach Mangini's not here, but, man, I always listen to his words. They always ring true in my ear what you need as far as winning and moving forward. Because a lot of people forget about Dallas's slow start. They forget about the tremendous finish that they had in the last 10 games, 8-2. They forget that they did win a playoff game. So how do you build on that? Typically, you build on that with continuity. So if I was Jason Garrett, I would just be concerned about my staff coming up with what's going to be our game plan. How are we going? We got a great running game plan. How are we going to throw the ball? How are we going to get a number two receiver involved? How are we going to get the tight end involved? How do we make Ezekiel Elliott a better pass catcher out of the backfield? Those should be the things that Jason Garrett should be concerned about this offseason, because I believe Jerry Jones is going to give him an extension before they kick off the season.
And if he gets the extension before he kicks off the season, then to me, a lot of this pressure is totally relieved. But if he doesn't, when he's coming off one of his, I would argue, his third best season as a Cowboys coach, you could argue even his second best season as a Cowboys coach, and if he doesn't get an extension, then that is a signal to the entire football world that the Cowboys, while they like Jason Garrett, they're really interested in it. Wait, next year, is Drew Brees going to retire? And is Sean Payton going to be interested to come to the Dallas Cowboys? Like, and Jason Garrett's going to be coaching with that somewhere in his mind, or at least that noise surrounding him, particularly if they get off to a slow start. But to your point about the offensive staff, see, it's about, and anyone, no matter what your job is, can relate to this, it's about workflow. Like, how are the meetings going to be run? How is the game plan going to be put together? And on Sundays, who's really going to be calling the plays? That's the question. Like, Kitna's not going to be calling plays, obviously. He's the quarterback's coach. But with Kellen Moore there, with Jason Garrett there, with all those staff changes, one of the reasons you tend to stick with a head coach, one of the benefits of sticking with a head coach long term, is you don't have a ton of turnover on your staff unless you have enormous success like the Patriots and you have guys hired away. This is a different situation. You've had the same head coach for 10 years now, but you're having a ton of turnover on the staff, not because you had these great guys that were hired away from you, but because you thought you could get better. And then so much of this obviously is going to come down to the evolution of Dak Prescott, which almost every Cowboys offense conversation comes down to that.
When you change a lot of the coaches around the head coach, how important is it for players to have the continuity in the head coach? Or does it not matter as much if these guys are working specifically with the quarterback's coach or Kellen Moore or, you know, the new offensive coordinator?
It doesn't matter that much as far as the head coach, because in the offseason, the head coach is not engaged as much as you are with your position coach and the offensive coordinator. But we need to find out who is Kellen Moore. Yeah. Now, I know Jerry Jones and them, they like him, man. They thought he was a great football mind. He had to be a great football mind because he could not throw the ball. Undersized, so he must be a thinker as a quarterback because talent was not his strong suit. Who is John Kitna? I like John Kitna, but who? I like him as a football player. I like him as a teammate, but who is John Kitna as a coach? I don't know that, so I can't appropriate my faith in the human being to. I don't know what type of system they're going to run. I don't know the effect that he has on Dak Prescott. I have talked to Sanjay Lau, who is their wide receiver coach, and I know he's come up with a couple different ways that they can throw the football, be able to throw the ball down the field, to be able to add to this offense. He thinks that that part is missing from Dak. That part's missing from Amari Cooper, from both of them. He believes that Amari Cooper's an elite talent. But if I can add a consistent deep threat to threaten that defense through Amari Cooper. So he's trying to do some things as far as the passing game. Who are these other guys? If someone out there is on TV saying, oh, I know who Kellen Moore is. I know who John Kitna is.
No, no, look, John Kitna was coaching high schools. Like, and I'm not saying, listen, he played in the NFL. He had a nice career.
I coached 8 years of high school. I'm doing a TV show.
Right.
I'm not fit to be coaching the Dallas Cowboys right now.
And so, and that is, and even at the wide receiver position, and you were a better wide receiver than Kitna was quarterback. Like, the Kitna thing, I'm not saying it's not going to work. Not at all. But I totally agree with your point. If anyone is on television, radio, newspaper with a strong, definitive opinion, here is what John Kitna is going to do for Dak Prescott, they're lying.
But
nobody has any idea.
Well,
this is my biggest concern with Kellen Moore and Kitna is it's the same thing when the next CEO of a company is the son of the previous CEO. When the people you hire are the people you're most familiar with, Kellen Moore once was a backup quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys. John Kitna once was a backup quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys. That doesn't mean it won't work. I just have concerns. Did you do a thorough enough search to get the best available person?
I do believe that Jason Garrett, that he has enough, he believes in their coaching ability to bring them on the staff. You don't get to 10 years coaching the Dallas Cowboys and you say, you know what, I'm just going to go out and grab me a high school coach. John Kitna, how he made his career as a not very, very talented, I'm talking about brilliant as far as decision making, great locker room guy, great leader. Yeah, I do believe he can be a good coach, but I can't just go on TV and say, yes, he is a good coach right now.
All right, let's move on to the New York Giants. They made a little news yesterday announcing that their quarterback situation will remain as is. According to head coach Pat Shurmur, Eli Manning will return for the 2019 season. The two-time Super Bowl winning quarterback has been the subject of criticism in New York. And GM Dave Gettleman has had enough of it.
The narrative around Eli for the past 4 years, 5 years, since I was gone, was really negative. The narrative's been negative. And there's an old saying, you tell a lie long enough, you believe it. The narrative is so negative that when you take that position, most people struggle getting off that spot. The narrative has been negative, and I don't think it's been fair.
All right, here we go. Let's talk about it. First of all, are the Giants making the right choice sticking with Eli Manning? And then we'll get into whether the narrative is fair or not.
Well, I think what Dave Gettleman said there is really interesting. He's absolutely right. When people get stuck on a position, they have trouble moving off it. And the position the New York Giants franchise has been stuck on is Eli Manning has to be our quarterback. And they have had trouble getting off that position despite reams of evidence that you should have taken an exit ramp here, could have taken an exit ramp here, and they just keep barreling, going barren left. And so are they making a mistake? No, not if they draft a quarterback at six. Not if they draft Dwayne Haskins, who I think really could use a redshirt season or at least a partial redshirt season. He played 14 games in his career at Ohio State. Plus, coming in the Michigan game is his redshirt freshman year. Like, he is a guy similar to Pat Mahomes. There's some rawness to him that he really benefited from his redshirt year, even though that is very rare in today's NFL. So if Eli's there as a mentor next year, I got no problem with it. It's an expensive mentor. It's $23 million. It'd only be $6 million if you traded him or cut him.
And as a mentor, he'd be playing and letting whoever they draft watch.
Certainly in the beginning of the year. But the idea that Eli Manning's 38 years old. In what world would anyone think Eli's going to be better older than Peyton was? Peyton by 39 was finished, done, gone. Eli, no step of his football career has been better than Peyton. I know Peyton dealt with the major neck injury. Mm-hmm. I get that part of it. But the Giants 6 years ago, what Gettleman's talking about, the narrative started. Well, that year, Eli had the lowest quarterback rating in football and led the league in interceptions.
It was warranted.
And then the first couple years with Odell, the offense was good, but the team wasn't. Then that third year, the offense wasn't good, but they made the playoffs, so it covered it up. And then the last 2 years, they've been terrible. And a lot of that, it's not all on number 10, but a lot of it's on number 10. That's not a narrative. That's just what the games have shown us.
Well, Dave Gettleman, first of all, if you keep wearing that ugly sweater thing you're wearing there, that's a lie that people aren't going to ever believe, all right? So last year, I give you a pass. You said that Saquon Barkley had the type of talent that even your mom would say draft him. He's a Hall of Famer. Okay, he showed us. I'm cool with that. Now, that money you spent on your left tackle now, that was money bad spent on Nate Solder. He is not an elite offensive lineman. So you've made a couple of decisions, one very good and one I believe to be average. How are you going to protect Eli? Eli cannot get hit. Now, I believe that Eli is better than the average quarterback if you protect him. So I got a running back. I don't have an offensive line. I got a superstar receiver that I believe is ready to play. So it's up to you because you got the bag of money. How are you going to spend it? Are you going to protect Eli? Because I'm like Nick. It's not a bad decision if you do draft a quarterback. But if you allow that lie to tell yourself, you done told it long enough for 2 years, and you keep believing that Eli is the future of the New York football Giants, then you're getting ready to mess this up, Dave, like, because you have to get a quarterback. All right, I'm all for Eli Manning. I gave him enough credit, winning them two Super Bowls. Oh, man, putting back in their starter. Eli was over there crying and starting streak and everything. I'm the one to help get the dang on coach fired because I came out against the coach. That was bad. So you done fired him. Gettleman, it's time to move on from Eli. Draft a quarterback. Eli, it's time for him to be a mentor. Now, from a positive standpoint, I would say that Eli, out of all the Mannings, that includes Archie. Archie was a ridiculous athlete. Peyton, the only reason why Peyton didn't make it to 40 playing elite was because of the neck surgery. Eli's the best athlete in the family. I keep saying this over and over and over and again. People are like, wow, really? Eli, yes. You can be not mobile in the quarterback, as a quarterback in the pocket.
And be a good athlete.
And be Dan Marino.
Yeah.
Ridiculous athlete, ridiculous basketball player, ridiculous shortstop in baseball until he hurt his knees. So Eli's athleticism, he's the most athletic of the Mannings. That's the reason why he hadn't got hurt. You can't be a bad athlete
and play, never get hurt. I mean,
impossible.
This guy's never been hurt.
There can't possibly be a scenario whereby the Giants think this is their guy without having to draft another quarterback.
Well, the scenario is this. I'll tell you this much about Dave Gettleman. I would wager any amount of money you'd let me that he's not drafting Kyler Murray. That much, Dave Gettleman talks too much about how football's a game of big people played by big people for big people. He is as old school as it gets in a lot of his quotes and a lot of his actions. He's not drafting the 5'9 kid, okay? They shouldn't draft Daniel Jones or Drew Locke. That's insanity, right? So it's Dwayne Haskins, and they have the 6th pick. That's 5 opportunities for someone else to go get him. If you are saying these things about Eli Manning, are you prepared to do the things you need to do in the draft to move up to go get Dwayne Haskins? The Jets traded up from 6 to 3 last year. This year they're sitting at 3 again, and they're saying they'll trade back. I don't think Arizona is going to take a quarterback with the first overall pick.
So that's 2.
So you'd have to get through number 2. Like, are you willing to trade the 6th pick, the 37th pick, and next year's number 1 to make sure you go get Dwayne Haskins? I would be. I don't think they will be if they're still saying, man, it's a false narrative on Eli Manning. It's just people have made up their mind, these fools who watch the games and create an opinion from watching the games rather than looking at Super Bowl rings and create an opinion. Like, so if I'm a Giants fan, I'm nervous because if you get Haskins, it's fine. Eli start as long as he wants because you have Haskins.
And if you don't?
If you draft Nate Solder's replacement at number 6 because Eli needs more protection, then we're going to be having the same conversation a year from now, just maybe with a different GM involved.
All right, let's take a break. Talk some more Lakers. Coming up, did LeBron send a message to all of his doubters last night ahead on First Things First? Back here first things first. Now joined by NBA champ Antoine Walker. Antoine, what good morning to you.
Also NCAA champ. Don't forget that.
Yeah,
NCAA we were a
couple
of ships
up
there.
Put that in there a little bit.
I'm going to get that in there. We ran out of time there, but I'm going to allow more time for that tomorrow. That was my bad. All right, Antoine, let's talk about the night that Dwayne Wade had. Your former teammate on your former team in his former form. With the Heat down 2 to the Warriors, Wade nailing this miraculous buzzer-beating three-pointer to win the game, beat the Warriors. An incredible scene in Miami. The Golden State loss puts them at just a half game up on the Nuggets. But let's hear from D. Wade after the thrilling finish.
I was talking to my coaches, Chris Quinn, EG, and I told him, I said, I passed up some shots last game from three. And I said, if I pass up any today, find me. So I wanted to make sure that, you know, I was aggressive. And I took the shots that was given to me, and I did that. So I wonder when Kobe hit that game winner on me in L.A., when he hit it on the top, when he hit it on the glass for the top of the key, I said, how is that possible? Thank you for showing me the way. Mamba mentality.
Mamba mentality. How special, Antoine, was this night in the moment for Dwayne Wade?
Well, I got to be honest. I'm a little biased. I play with D. Wade, but also D. Wade is from Chicago. Mm-hmm. So we share some of the same backgrounds, a lot of the same friends. So I'm so happy for him this year, because as a player, you don't get this opportunity to go out on your own merit a lot. And he's having fun with it. You see it after every game. Other opponents are treating him really, really well. But I was excited. I think the moment you saw Eric Spoelstra talked about Dwayne finishing the season playing starter minutes and really trying to make the playoffs. So he's going to be a big part of what they got going on these last 20 games. So I'm excited for him. I know how hard he works to keep his body together. And coming to Chicago, it didn't work out. But to go back to Miami and have the success they have. And if they make the playoffs, it'll be great. It'll be great. But this moment right here, if you don't make it, at least you got something to look back at.
At least you got this moment right here. And it didn't, by the way, look like Dwayne Wade was going to have an opportunity to go out on his own terms. Like, last year
Let's not forget he got a gift from Cleveland.
Right. I mean,
he was awful with LeBron.
It doesn't work out in Chicago to where they pay him to leave. LeBron picks him up, and the Cavs pick him up, I should say. And they...
You said it right.
Yeah, you said it.
You don't like to say it. You don't like to say it, but you said it.
I almost stopped you. LeBron picked him up in a deal.
I think LeBron allowed one player.
It's either. This is what he was going to say.
Hold on.
It's either LeBron picked him up, because he typically says that, or he lets it slip and say, we picked him up.
No, I don't say we. Hold on. That's not true, but the other one might be a little true. Doesn't matter. Point is, it doesn't work out in Cleveland, right? And they reconcile in Miami, because he and Pat Riley were a little angry at each other.
Absolutely.
He may be more angry at Pat than Pat at him, but he wasn't very good last year until the end. At the end, in the playoffs, he was good for them. And now he's averaging 14.5 points a game this year. He's been one of their most key players. He isn't starting really, but he is playing the end of games like this. We're not showing it here. But he hit the three on the possession before to put them in position after Durant had a sick four-point play that I thought was going to ice the game. And right now, yeah, they're in the 10 spot, but they're a half game out of the playoffs. Like, so this is great. And it's seeing him do the lap around the court, jump on the scorer's table. Yeah. I'm sure you guys both from your career have moments that stand out above some of the others. Like, just some moments particularly near the end of a, wow, like that to hold on to. D. Wade will have this to hold on to forever, no matter what happens the rest of the way. I'm so happy.
Yeah, he's got a lot of great moments. And like Antoine, my relationship with Dwayne, it's a little bit different, because I was a season ticket holder for the Heat. And a friend of the Heat, Pat Riley, Randy Fun, traveled with them. I was on the court when Dwayne Wade won his first championship. So a lot of people like, oh, man, LeBron made him a champion. No, they didn't. That dude dominated the NBA Finals. It was unbelievable of how he grew his game and took over the court.
As a kid.
And being on the court, watching him, how he played the game, plays the game the right way. And since, he's had some struggles. He had to leave Miami. The owners of the team there, they never thought Dwayne Wade. They have lifers in Miami. Mm-hmm. Lonzo Mourning, man, Haslam, Dwayne Wade. Like, these are lifers. They will work for the team going into the future. So Tried to go back to his hometown, Chicago. It didn't work. Tried to go with his homeboy, LeBron, in Cleveland. It didn't work. He's also had some struggles off the court. Custody battles with his kids. He's got remarried. So I've seen his whole life come full circle. This is a great story. And that is the traditional Dwayne Wade. When I finish a game off, he jumps on the scoreboard. Yeah. Yes. And as they call it in Dade County,
Wade County.
It's Wade County. Man, it was refreshing to see an old man do what we had seen him do as a young man.
It's crazy to hear you talk about, because I was obviously a part of that team, and that finals was unbelievable. He wins game 3 for us and saves us. Mm-hmm. We go down 0-3, we probably obviously lose that series, but he was terrific. I mean, he averaged 35-8 in that series, something like that. And people don't understand that. I think everybody looks at his championships with LeBron, but he was special. And obviously, when Shaq got there, gave him the name Flash, and he kind of took off from that. So I had to be a part of that. I was so happy to be a part of that, to see him become a star and become one of the best two guards ever. To me, he's in the top 5 all time, two guards.
Oh,
we can argue
no
about
question.
That. So that's a lot of people sometimes forget about Dwayne Wade, because he did have a couple rough patches with Chicago and Cleveland, but he's unbelievable.
Jordan, Kobe, West, Wade are your 4 best two guards ever. And people can argue over the order, but those are the top 4, no question.
Allen Iverson, too.
Let's quickly just talk about what this means for the Golden State Warriors, now just a half a game up on Denver. How worried should this team be about holding on to that top spot in the West?
Depends who they play. It's not a lot of teams that can actually go into Golden State and win. I think Houston Rockets are one of those teams that can go in there and win. Not sure if the Denver Nuggets are experienced enough to go in there and win. But so it's not really that big of a problem for Golden State. I think they do have to think about last year a little bit, because Houston, if Chris Paul doesn't get hurt, they may get out that series because of the home court advantage situation. So they may have to think about that. And if I'm Golden State, I want to be at home. I think they play the best basketball at home. They've shown that over the last 4 years to be a great home team. I don't know why they would not want to be that. I know that on the roster they can get it done probably from the 2 seed, but I believe there's only the Houston Rockets is the one team that can go in there and beat them in the Western Conference. So that's the only team I think they should be worried about.
Golden State has been scary at home the last 4 years, but not this year. When you look at the top teams in the NBA, if you look at their losses, right now Golden State, they got 10 losses at home. We had never, ever seen them lose that many games. And the top teams, most of them have won in Golden State. Houston right now, they haven't lost against Golden State. So I would be concerned not only in the West, but I would be concerned about that home court if you get to the finals.
Last night was their 10th road loss. 8 losses at home, which is the most they've had in this run. The point still stands. The home court matters at the end of the 6th week of the playoffs and at the end of the 8th week of the playoffs. By that, I mean the conference finals and the NBA finals. Golden State has never not had home court in the NBA finals. That's the other part of this. It's not just, are you going to keep home court over Denver? They have essentially, at this point in my mind, given up the opportunity to have home court if they were to play Milwaukee in the NBA Finals, and they are losing the ability to have home court if they play Toronto in the NBA Finals. That's a problem. And the other problem is, even if Denver doesn't scare them, what about the tougher road as the 2 seed? What about potentially having to play Oklahoma City or Houston in round 2 if you're the 2 seed? Like, it gets more difficult. They were down 24 midway through the second quarter.
Yeah.
They went all out to win that game. KD went crazy near the end, and they lost anyway. That's a tough loss for them.
We got to take a break. Antoine, we'll see you a little bit later on in the show. Coming up, is Kyler Murray emerging as the top pick in the NFL draft? That's next on First Things First. FS1 is your destination for the day's best sports shows. Tune in for the biggest personalities on the biggest stories. We get you started right here with First Things First. You can catch it on Monday through Friday only on FS1. Time now for your Subway choice moment. Kyler Murray has been shooting up draft boards, possibly all the way to number 1. The Cardinals, who own that top pick, have been shooting down rumors that they're going after Kyler in the draft. Cardinals new head coach Cliff Kingsbury once praised the Heisman winner, and thus the rumors. However, the Arizona Cardinals drafted Josh Rosen last year, and their GM, Steve Keim, is sticking with him. He joined the herd yesterday. Take a listen.
I can't foresee that right now. Again, we know that this is a process we have to go through. And again, I think that what Josh showed us last year on and off the field makes me extremely comfortable that he's our quarterback moving forward.
All right, Cece, what do you think the Cardinals should do with the quarterback position next season?
I think they should go with Josh Rosen, but you got to be able to get him some help. You got to be able to protect him. The fastest way for a young quarterback not to be successful, you let him get hit NFL type during his rookie year, second year. You let him keep getting pressure in his face where he can't move, he can't make decisions, and that's what the Arizona Cardinals, that's what they served up to Josh Rosen in year number one. I don't even think it's fair. I believe that Josh Rosen is going to be a better pro than Kyler Murray. So if there was a no-brainer, if there was a Cam Newton in the draft, if there was a Peyton Manning in the draft, I would say, okay, I would look at it because I believe there's tremendous value with Josh Rosen being able to ship him somewhere right. else. But no, I believe Josh Rosen is going to be a better pro, and that's what this is about, not who was a better college player. Because if we think that Kyler Murray would have been good in that system last year under the duress that Josh went under, that's not true. So this is I believe Steve Keim, that they're doing the right thing moving forward. They're going to draft the best player, and I believe that that's Nicky Bosa out of Ohio State.
So that last part is the only part I disagree with you about. Not that Nicky Bosa is not the best player, but I think the best thing they could do for Rosen, the best thing they could do for the franchise, if you are not going to take a quarterback with the number one overall pick, and there's not one but two quarterbacks teams seem to be very high on, and Kyler and, of course, Dwayne Haskins, the way to get the most value out of that pick is to shop that pick yourself. It is almost, when you have as many needs as the Cardinals have, and to your point, you need to keep him upright. You certainly need another receiver. Larry Fitzgerald cannot keep playing forever. I like their running back, David Johnson, even though he wasn't that good. He wasn't as good last year and the year before he was hurt. In their defense, you like Patrick Peterson, you like Chandler Jones, and you've got some question marks everywhere else. I would try to see if a team like the Giants is interested in trading up from six and giving me extra picks. If a team that maybe is further down in the draft but really loves Kyler or Haskins wants to move all the way up, because I think the Cardinals have so many needs, just one superstar pass rusher is not enough value out of that number one overall pick.
This is the biggest problem. Who selected number two?
San Francisco.
Did I go to the Rose Bowl this year Ohio State was playing in?
I believe you did.
Did Nicky Bosa not make a guest appearance to only not only watch Ohio State practice but showed up at the game? Mm-hmm. There was also a general manager. His name's John Lynch. I know John really well. We played a lot of football against each other. John Lynch will not let Nicky Bosa go past number two. So if you're Arizona and you want Nicky Bosa, You can't move out of that spot.
Oh, I agree totally. You would be passing up on the opportunity to get Nicky Bosa. I don't think you could trade back and still get him. I'm not saying you could get the player at six that you would get at one. I'm not arguing that. I'm saying that I think they need an offensive lineman. I think they need almost everything. And I like Rosen. So I would keep my quarterback, and I wouldn't hate the idea of drafting Nicky Bosa at one. I think he's going to be a 12-sack a year guy by year two. But I think they have so many needs. It's similar to how I felt about the Giants last year. I love Saquon. I love him as a player. But if you weren't going to take a quarterback at number two, I think the more value would have been doing something similar to what the other New York team did. The Jets move back a few spots in the draft and get three extra premium picks. That's what, if I'm Steve Keim, I'm most interested in. Certainly far more interested than taking Kyler at one and then shopping Josh Rosen.
But you're comfortable with keeping Josh Rosen in that Cardinal system, get him a little bit of help and see what he can do in year two.
I was very high on him coming out of college. We all know this. I didn't care about any of the off-the-field stuff, and I loved the way he threw the football. He had a terrible rookie season. Nobody can deny that. Mm-hmm. I also wonder, aside from, like, let's just say Darnold was there. Would Darnold, Baker might have looked better. Would Darnold have looked much better than Rosen did? I don't think so. I think most of the quarterbacks taken in this draft would have struggled the way Rosen did. There's nothing I can pull on from his rookie season and say he's going to be a star. But given the circumstances, I couldn't give up on him 1 year in. I don't think that would be fair. They gave up on the coach 1 year in. Right. Can't give up on the quarterback 1 year in as well.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.